If you're one of the many Americans working remotely during the pandemic, think about all the things you haven't been doing. Taking a business trip, staying in a hotel, renting a car, eating at a restaurant, going out to lunch near your office, having a happy hour with your coworkers, parking, taking public transit, whatever. Well, Derek Thompson writes, all those changes to our daily lives could change the country in more ways than we realize. He is senior editor at The Atlantic, and he joins us from Washington as he does each week. Hi, Derek.
Hey, Jeremy.
Well, start with the big picture here. Do we have a sense of how many people are still working remotely, and will some of them remain remote even after the pandemic?
Yeah, the answer is tens of millions, and I am among the tens of millions of people who've been forced to undergo this experiment in working from home. And I should say at the onset that we're the lucky ones. There are also millions, tens of millions of people who are unemployed right now or furloughed, in part because their job cannot be done remotely. But in any case, for those of us who are working remotely, the short run, or at least what we thought was going to be the short run, is becoming the long run. Google announced in July that its roughly 200,000 employees will not be coming back to the office until next summer, next July. Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, has said that he expects half of Facebook's workforce to be remote within the decade. So you have the beginning of what could be huge changes to the workforce, and more of our lives, these those of us in the white-collar workforce, will be homebound for potentially a long, long time.
So you've been looking into what this means for the economy, for the country. You point to research from economists at MIT about what all this remote work means for the leisure and hospitality industry, for instance. What did you find?
Right. So I spoke to MIT's David Autor, and he told me that, look, he's looking at this idea as a phenomenon he calls telepresence. More of our work will be telepresent. It will be virtual. So while in normal times, most of us occupy two spaces, a home and a workplace that we travel back and forth between, more people will be working from one place. And that removal of that second place is going to leave a hole in the metropolitan labor force. Emptier offices mean fewer weekday lunches at restaurants. It means fewer happy hours. It means fewer window shoppers, less of a need for buildings, cleaning, security, maintenance services. There are tens of millions of jobs that basically exist because of the daily commutes of tens of millions of people between their home and their office. And so if all those people don't necessarily come back, even if you only have, you know, a couple million people who work remotely for the foreseeable future, it could have a really big reverberation on this labor force that is reliant on that shuttling between home and office.
The best example that I can think of this, by the way, is a former office that I had in Midtown Manhattan on the East Side, which was packed to the brim with people every workday at lunchtime. But if you went there on a weekend, there's nobody there. And I think a lot of downtowns are like that as well across this country. Now, you write that remote work will increase what you call free agent entrepreneurship. What is that?
Yeah, briefly, I think that a lot of people are going to be feeling alone as they work remotely, in part because they literally will be alone. And as you're working remotely and you're, you know, looking at your computer and you're in G-chats and maybe you're in Zoom meetings, well, yes, you are keeping in touch with colleagues, but you're also keeping in touch, I think, with other virtual online communities. You know, you're checking in on LinkedIn, you're talking to people on Twitter and Facebook. And in a world where people are developing the skills to represent themselves as free agents, they might be more inclined to take on side gigs, even to start their own side businesses and individual businesses and break off from the company to whose headquarters they are not going. So I think for a variety of psychological and just spatial reasons, a remote workforce is less culturally bound up with the headquarters itself, and therefore individual stars might be more likely to strike out and do their own thing.
I must say, anecdotally, I know a number of people who have moved out of cities since the pandemic because they don't need to be there right now. Do you expect larger demographic shifts because of remote work, and will people move away from cities?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to try to, you know, take their superstar city jobs out of superstar cities like New York and San Francisco, maybe even Washington, D.C., Chicago, because these are really expensive cities. It's also the case that these cities were shrinking before the pandemic started. So this is an acceleration of a trend, not necessarily just an invention. But I think it's important to look at, you know, what's the implication? All right, if some people move from, you know, New York to Connecticut, that's not a huge deal. Or, you know, Boston to the suburbs of Boston, not going to be a huge deal for our politics. But I also think that there are people who are going to be moving from blue metros in blue states to blue metros in red states, moving, for example, from New York City to Atlanta, Phoenix, or Austin. And that's going to have huge reverberations for the political map. It's going to accelerate Georgia and Texas and Arizona beginning to move a little bit into the blue column so that Democrats are more competitive in the Sun Belt. And I think it's important to not underestimate just how seismic that demographic shift could be for our politics.
Very interesting. And we're getting a preview here because Derek's piece on this in The Atlantic is going to be in the publication tomorrow. Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. Thanks as always.
Thank you.